it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. Easter Friday here tomorrow in New Zealand. We are, as you can see from your video, if you're watching on YouTube, we've got a beer in hand. We're ready for the weekend. It's raining outside, but there's cricket and sport aplenty on the TV this weekend. Masters golf, of course, the IPL. But we're going to talk primarily cricket because that's, you know, what we do. We're going to talk about the IPL. A great start to the tournament. Two games in for most of the teams. Also, New Zealand, Sri Lanka. New Zealand squads to Pakistan. And a little bit of domestic controversy in the culmination of the Plunkett Shield. All coming up on the Top Order Podcast. Stay tuned. Well, boys, let's start with the Indian Premier League. Just saying off air, I think for those of you who have not seen this tournament around the cricketing world, it's pretty bloody good. I'm buying stock now in IPL 16, properly invested into this. It's been, look, a cracking start to the tournament over the course of the first couple of games for most teams. There's games going on tonight that'll complete that, I guess, round in terms of two games apiece. But what's caught the eye in terms of the early front runners and talking points through the course of the start of the 16th edition, WrestleMania 16?
Well, I have to say, it's pretty good. It's pretty lucky that I held on to all our Will Young stock, and now you can invest it in the IPL. So that's a handy start to proceedings. But I think we have to cover this now because I don't really want to spend the whole podcast talking about it. Kane Williamson's injury was obviously, from a New Zealand point of view, I think the biggest thing that's come out of the IPL so far. And I don't know, it's just a deflating moment. I mean, just absolutely, like, the news has come out today. I think we all kind of feared it. When I first saw, you know, I logged on in the morning to sort of see the IPL stuff on the morning of when that game happened, and you know, it was actually April Fool's, and I kind of thought, oh no, there's some jokes going around. Hopefully this is just some joke or April Fool's trick that Kane's out of the World Cup. But no, this horrible injury, and I think since that moment we've all been fearing, okay, it looks like an ACL, you know, clearly in a lot of pain.
Diagnosed online by the NRL physio. We need to give Raj a shout out. Yep. So he did want me to mention on the podcast that the NRL physio did diagnose that ACL from several thousand miles away immediately and correctly.
And is that mainly because I said, how can he diagnose that from millions of miles away?
Yeah, yes. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah. So just in his absence, we've just cleared that fact up that the NRL physio was correct and did diagnose it correctly.
Well, and I think credit to you, Binksy. You have tried to keep us upbeat the whole time and said, look, Kane's going to be okay, all of this kind of stuff. But yeah,
oh, look, Adam's done the right thing completely from a psychology perspective, as often he does.
Well, yeah, that's questionable, but to be fair, yeah, news has come out today. Yeah, it is ACL, going to have surgery in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and you know, I think he's gonna, well, they've said, you know, not completely shutting the door on the World Cup, but it's I think
it's pretty unlikely from here to be able to get recovery in 6 months.
Where might he get any cricket in if he does make an ahead of schedule recovery?
Well, that's the question as well. Look, I mean, realistically, when we're talking about ACL injuries, it's usually like 9 to 12 months, right? So yeah, I can't see how he makes the World Cup. I would love to see it, but yeah, just absolutely gutted for him, I think. More, you know, obviously gutted for New Zealand, and it's going to have ramifications for what we do with our team. And, you know, he's been such a crucial player for us for so many years, and thinking about the last couple of World Cups that we've had,
yeah,
you know, how important he's been. But I think just gutted for him, because it would have been awesome. Like, we've seen in these crowds in the IPL games how amazing that atmosphere is over in India. Mm. Oh, that's going to be the buzz of that tournament is going to be fantastic. And I don't know, someone like him as well, you don't know how many kind of big tournaments you've got left. And I think the ODI World Cup feels to me like the funnest one, because it goes for the longest, and you sort of got the, it's long enough that you actually can get into the tournament and do all of those things. So yeah, just gutted.
And absolutely gutted for Kane Williamson, for his, you know, having a long road to recover. We don't really know what ACL injuries look like in cricket. There aren't that many of them. Mm. There's a pretty known recovery pattern and process for ACL injuries in football and rugby and basketball and contact sports, etc. But for cricket, we don't really know what Kane's injury recovery is going to look like. Can he get back in 6 to 8 months in time for a World Cup? We just don't know.
What was Dean Jones's knee injury? Because I remember he did something to his knee probably middle of his career, and he always had to turn blind if the ball was on the wrong side, because he couldn't turn on one of his knees. So I don't know whether that was an ACL.
Yeah, it could have been a meniscus or an MCL injury, not sure. I mean, the challenge with Kane is that he's going to have to learn to run again effectively on that leg, and also that's the piece that's going to be the most challenging for him, is to be able to turn and get in and out of the box running between wickets, because that involves a very, very complex set of twists and turns and stresses on all of those joints, and the tendons and ligaments that control the knee. And he's going to have to figure out how he's going to get them strong enough so that they're not compensating for each other, and then he goes and injures something else, and that's going to be a real problem as well.
Are you the NRL physio?
I am not.
No, okay.
No.
Cool. I mean, look at it. I guess kind of moving away from that, we might talk about all the consequences now for the New Zealand squad a bit later on when we talk about New Zealand and Sri Lanka and the tour to Pakistan and things like that. But it hasn't impacted Gujarat. Won the tournament last year. Awesome start for them. Hardik Pandya's getting, you know, his leadership's being praised all over the place once again. I mean, what can we say about them? They've just looked $1 million to start the tournament.
Yeah, look, two from two, obviously, out the front with the Kings, Punjab. So they're two from two as well. So, I guess we all had, I think, Gujarat in our thinking for top four.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Punjab, the surprise package.
I had them
in the other four.
Can I just ask about if Hardik? Obviously, Rohit's had... his form, if you look back through his form, like, he got 100 against New Zealand on an absolute road. In one day, he got 100 in the test against Australia. He's not, I wouldn't say he's out of form, but he's maybe not in the imperious form that he was in, you know, probably 2013 to 2019 kind of range in ODIs and things. Do you think there's any scenario where Hardik Pandya is the captain of India in this World Cup?
In this World Cup?
World Cup. This 2023 World Cup. Because I just feel like everything we've seen with him as captain, it just feels like he is bringing the squad together. He's bringing every player, I don't know, it kind of feels like he's making them better. They're all getting more out of themselves, and I don't know, just he seems to play better as the leader as well.
Can I say no and give you the reference of how much happier Virat Kohli looks to be under Rohit? And if you want to make one person happy in the Indian team, I think it's Virat. And he seems to be pretty happy under Rohit, particularly in that test side.
Fair enough.
I don't think they do anything before the World Cup, but after the World Cup, if you split the captaincy again and give Rohit the test side and Hardik the white ball side, that's probably not a bad decision. Thoughts?
I'm going to split down the middle. I'm going to say no to Lippy, but I'm also going to say no to you as well.
Oh, well done.
I think we've got a long IPL, 70 games or somewhere around that. So, and I think Mumbai Indians' form is already a worry.
Yeah.
I think in the tournament, I know we're early doors, but we're going to sit here next week and we could be having the opposite conversation.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of water to go under the bridge. Where I'm going to disagree with Baldy is, I do think that the form and fitness and all that kind of stuff through the IPL will govern the way that India side looks for that 50 over World Cup, I think.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because, there's so many players that are actually not even bursting onto the scene, but continuing where they've left off on previous scenes as well. You know, and we talk, you know, about stock going up and down. Surikami Yadav continuing to struggle. But then, you know, on the flip side of that, you've got some players that are coming in and playing fantastically.
All these young players.
Sanju Samson's looked brilliant. Gaikwad looks brilliant so far. Yeah, not necessarily Indian, but Kyle Mayers.
Man, he can play cricket.
God, like, I genuinely, I know they kind of think about getting the old bat gauge on now and again because of the size of the bat. I reckon they need to be looking at this because it looks like it's got a bloody trampoline in it.
Looks small in his hands, though.
It looks like a matchstick, but a matchstick with a, you know, a very, very high bounce rating on it. So he has just been absolutely... I wrote down brutal, but I think that actually does him a disservice because some of the cricket shots and the timing has just been absolutely cricket shots. Yep. And I think then the ability for him to come in and open the bowling as well, you know, has had one good game of the ball and one not so good game of the ball. I think that's always going to happen in the IPL. But yeah, he's been fantastic. And
he's someone that probably we thought might not be in that overseas top four. Yep. And I think that's what's been interesting this, like as sides are still kind of coming together, aren't they? There's South Africans, a lot of the South African players haven't arrived.
All the Sri Lankan players aren't there yet.
Sri Lankan players are still here. So yeah, players starting to turn up and you've got guys like Mayers who are going, well, you got to pick me now. So what are you going to do? Are you going to have to drop someone like Stoinis or someone that's been kind of established? So yeah, very interesting start.
Yeah. Anything else that's caught your eye? I want to talk about keepers. We talked about Glenn Phillips last week. So he's probably got another game or two because I think Klaassen would probably come in.
I think that's
almost a shootout, isn't it? Josh Butler not keeping wicket, injured his hand today, I think, but took two screamers in the outfield. Mm. And again, that Glenn Phillips comparison, a keeper that can absolutely field. It's just not fair. You know, these guys, Devon Conway as well, you know, keeps wicket a little bit. It's fantastic in the outfield.
I reckon he's a good singer too. All those blokes, I reckon they can sing and dance.
Well,
and,
we've already seen Glenn Phillips singing.
I'm sure
the listeners don't need me to rehash that song.
No, definitely not.
Full Grammy Awards covered on the Top Order podcast later this year with IPL singing and various other singing. Before we move on off the IPL.
I'm not going to move off from the IPL. I was going to move off from the singing.
Oh, good. Fair enough. Mumbai, you said Mumbai's form is concerning. They've only played one game. How much can we read into that?
Well, not a massive amount and then also quite a lot.
Okay.
And they have lost their last nine, I think, openers. I saw Shane Bond talking about it, saying,
it's not a great start.
It's starting to become a concern. It's starting to become very frustrating that we lose this game every single year. But... Mm. Yeah, I tend to agree with Binksy. I think the three of us all put them, you know, maybe in our top fours.
Top five.
Thinking about that kind of range. And when I was doing that, I was thinking, okay, well, their batting's just so strong that they'll be able to kind of patch it together with their bowlers. They'll just find someone. But then you watch that first game and you think, oh, maybe they can't patch it together because the bowling attack looked terrible.
It's kind of, for me, that kind of, you know, some of its parts conversation, isn't it? They've got, you know, such superstars in Rohit Sharma, Ishan Kishan, Cameron Green batted at three. We talked about Sky, Tim David coming in. And you know, ultimately, they didn't seem to have that sort of cohesion. It almost looked like, I don't know what the basketball analogy would be. You'd probably help me out, but almost like the kind of all-star game, and they just didn't gel.
Yeah.
In terms of that sort of batting lineup from a partnerships perspective. But look, I think you've got to give credit as well in that game to the RCB. I thought Siraj bowled really, really well. Reece Topley looked good.
Shame, isn't he? He's injured himself again, hasn't he? It'll be interesting to see how long he's out for.
Whether he gets back to fitness. And then, we talked a little bit about Michael Bracewell as well, and he's got a Guernsey as well for the RCB. So, and then look, let's just, you know, also shout out that in that Faf du Plessis and Virat Kohli put on an amazing opening partnership.
That was so awesome.
That's where you don't read into it too much. I think, you know, early out the gates and probably the pressure as well that the owners put on that team, I think is always going to be a factor.
And on Cameron Green too. Like he batted at three. He's a $3 million man, has a lot of responsibility in that team. They didn't win, and now there's pressure on him all of a sudden. Look, I think this is a really good RCB side. RCB is a top three side. And to lose to RCB,
seriously good in that game.
Even by 8 wickets, you know, 16 overs, they were 10.5. I think they're just a really good RCB side. And when they're on, they're pretty close. They're not unbeatable, but they're tough to beat.
Yeah. And if you wear gold pads, you've got to back it up.
Yeah, you do.
And they did. It is a bit jazz.
I think we've seen so far just how important these opening partnerships, or, you know, your top three. I think we always kind of talk about that with T20, but we've seen it. It's been really apparent in this.
The wickets have been good. The grounds aren't the hugest. We're seeing, I think we were talking off air, 9.18 is the average run rate, 355 runs a game so far. You know, it's been crackerjack entertainment, particularly in terms of the, you know, the sixes. It's almost like you used to go fours and then sixes. They almost count sixes now ahead of fours in terms of the ratios that you see in that in that form of the game. From a bowling perspective, Border, you've got to be pleased with Nathan Ellis. He's looked like a pretty good pickup, and I'm fizzing about Mark Wood. He bowled absolutely rapid in that.
Well, he destroyed Delhi. Yeah, it was Delhi.
Those back-to-back deliveries where he cleaned up Marsh for that second.
That was pretty.
And Marsh was like, huh? Yeah. The look on his face was.
Yeah, you got done with a good one.
I want to see that a few times in the summer.
And there's him and Nokia. Like, I mean, and we've got Umran Malik. There's just
genuine pace.
Some excitement in this tournament. I mean, really we've seen, I guess, for all three of those guys, actually, in various parts of those games, they can go as well. Like, that speed means that you can go seriously for plenty, but it's pretty exciting when they get it right. And yeah, Wood, that was something special.
Well, guys, let's move on from the IPL. We've got a lot of New Zealand cricket to talk about. I should just point out that, you know, for you Red Bull purists out there, there is a test match going on at the moment as well. Ireland and Bangladesh playing in Mirpur at the moment. So live score update for you. Ireland 195 for 6, so just a lead of 40 on Bangladesh's first innings of 369. So they're going to need to put together a serious partnership.
And by the time this podcast comes out, they will have either won or lost. So well done, Ireland or Bangladesh, for chasing down that short.
Absolutely, but I just want to say, you know, if you're searching for highlights and you kind of want. I don't know.
Red Bull cricket.
Valium rather than speed, then that's probably the option.
Wow. We'll take your word for that. The A-class drugs.
Well, I don't think Valium, I don't know. Never had it.
You're telling the story.
You are, exactly.
Right.
You did mention Bangladesh, though. Worth noting that Shakib has decided to opt out of the IPL, which is an interesting decision. I sort of feel like it's interesting that anyone puts their trust in him to start with, but that's my own personal opinion.
Well, we'll talk about it after the pod, shall we? We don't want to get into that on air. You never know with libel laws.
Was he in KKR?
Yes, he was
in KKR, but Jason Roy has signed up, I believe, for the KKR today.
That's interesting. That's an ad.
Hadn't heard that. Breaking news.
It broke a little while ago.
Okay, good.
I'm pretty sure it was KKR. Yeah.
If he signed for the KKR, that's good for them because they were missing an opening bat. And so they had Nareen, they had Russell, they had Shakib to fill out some of that top order. Having Jason Roy in there will help them no end.
Yeah.
Strong.
Okay, I'm going to double check my facts on that. But
you do that. We're going to talk about New Zealand.
We shall. Let's move on and talk a little bit about New Zealand. So I know we've got the Slack channel going on. Jason Roy roped in by KKR for 2.8 crore. So, we'll see how that goes. But New Zealand, Sri Lanka, we've joked a little bit on the Slack channel. It's been almost like New Zealand A against Sri Lanka when you look at the players missing from an IPL perspective. What are your impressions on that series? You boys went and watched the Eden Park game, which was pretty good to watch.
Pretty
I think
exciting, yeah.
Very exciting game in its conclusion. Absolutely.
I got back from the kids' scapes car wash, and you know, was watching the super over, which was good. Yeah, a good spectacle to watch, isn't it? A super over, and we'll come on to that, I think, in terms of personnel. And you can't really criticise the team for losing a super over, can you?
I wouldn't have thought so.
Particularly if you count back on boundaries and stuff like that. But
let's not go here.
We won't go there. But thoughts on the series, Lip? You happy?
I think very, very happy, actually, if you take it through to, you know, we're recording this on Thursday night, as you said, or the night before Easter Friday. And sort of if you look back to the ODI series where we lost the game to rain, but we had, you know, New Zealand won that series 2-0. Now we're 1-1 in the T20s. And when you consider that Sri Lanka, you know, traditionally come over here and don't do very well, but, you know, then you look around at their T20 form and they won the Asia Cup, and that, you know, you would think a lot of their players are going to the IPL. On paper, I think they have the better side on paper than we do in actual lineup terms. So, yeah, I think it's pretty encouraging. I mean, am I delusional here that actually, like at the start of this series or the start of the summer, I said it last week, at the start of the summer, there were all these concerns about no depth in New Zealand cricket, like missing Bolt and missing Jameson, and suddenly you've got no bowlers, your batters, you know, Will Young's not performing, all these other guys are not performing. Suddenly, there's no depth. But now we've seen an A side basically beat Sri Lanka and quite comfortably. We smashed them in those first two ODIs and then really beat them quite comfortably yesterday in the T20.
I mean, the Eden Park game is a little bit of a fly in the ointment because Sri Lanka were allowed to get on top of New Zealand with the bat. So yep. I thought New Zealand's bowling was honest, but Sri Lanka really took New Zealand to town quite a bit. They hit New Zealand to parts of the ground that New Zealand didn't want to be hit to.
Mm.
And I think, you know, Shipley bowled some really good overs, and then he bowled one over that got taken, which proved to be pretty decisive in the context of the match.
Yeah, that last over, yeah.
That last over. And all three of those, you know, first choice fast bowlers for New Zealand all went above 40 at Eden Park, which is easy to do, mm-hmm. but they all went above 40. I actually thought Ish Sodhi was really good. It's easy for him to go air miles at Eden Park. He only went at eights. Jimmy Neesham did a really good job, took two key wickets, and went under eight and over. So I thought he had a low-key, really good game with the ball.
Yeah.
But he let me down with the batting, you know, in that chase. He was crucial to New Zealand's hopes, and he gave his wicket away, playing a shot on the last ball of the over to a part of the ground where he shouldn't be hitting the cricket ball. And he'll be disappointed with himself for that. But he had that game under control for New Zealand, and his dismissal really changed the momentum in Sri Lanka's favour. And it just so happened that Ruchin Ravindra played a really, really good innings, and Ish Sodhi hit the best six that he'll probably ever hit.
That was so much fun.
That was incredible last over. But I think if you were to be critical of the New Zealand batting, Chapman and Neesham, who were two crucial cogs in that middle order, gave their wickets away by hitting the balls to the wrong part of the ground. So Chapman hit the ball to the longest part of the ground and got caught. Neesham is so powerful down the ground and hit a couple of big bombs down the ground.
Yeah.
And should have just continued to do that. Tried to play a really, really fancy sweep off the last ball of the over and hit it straight to a fielder. That's a work on for him. If he can get that out of his game, he's going to be devastating for New Zealand going forward.
Let me ask you a question about the super over. And again, you can't really read a massive amount into six balls aside, but Ravindra was going pretty well at the end of that innings. And they, I think, obviously wanted a left-right-hand combination. Maybe, again, reading too much into that. Would you have sent him out instead of Jimmy Neesham for that super over?
I don't think so. I don't think there was any question that, like, if you're thinking about who are our most powerful hitters, and I think that's really what you kind of weighing up when you're actually working out your super over. You're thinking, who can hit the most boundaries?
Yeah.
And Neesham at Eden Park, that's his game, just going straight. I think exactly what you said when he played the reverse sweep and got out, it was incredibly frustrating. And I think, you know, I think that's probably been the challenge for him and throughout his whole international career. He's shown a lot of signs recently that he can be a match winner for New Zealand. He has done it, you know, has been a match winner for New Zealand.
He absolutely is, no doubt about it.
It's just that you get those moments as well, and he hasn't been able to string those consistent games together, and that was another chance to kind of win the game. But I think what was interesting about that is that we had that the whole way. Like you mentioned Chapman, we were going along really nicely there. Ravindra was the same. When he was in, I mean, to be fair to him, probably
he needed 12 and a half.
A metre out either side when he smashes that one down the ground, a metre either side of where he hits it, and that's six, and then we probably won that game anyway. So, yeah, it's small margins, but yeah, I don't think there's any concerns about who they actually threw out there. I think probably swinging it back to Ravindra, I think that's been a huge positive out of these last few games. I keep harking back to when we talked to him on the podcast. I just felt like he had this such positive energy, and like you kind of didn't sort of positive energy but also very mature in the way that he was talking about and things. And I feel like although he hasn't set the world on fire as an international cricketer, he hasn't even really set the Plunkett Shield or, you know, New Zealand domestic cricket on fire, I just feel like there's something there, and that he looks like he belongs at international level. And yeah, I think that's been really, really encouraging that he's actually kind of got those runs. Like that one day 49 that he got, that was in a tricky situation. Same with the T20 when he got those runs. It was a situation where he was kind of the last recognized batter, and he was batting like someone who had the game in control. Obviously didn't quite get us there, but yeah, so super impressed with what he's been doing.
And isn't it interesting that if you had have like stepped back 18 months ago and had Bracewell and Ravindra side by side, you'd go, well, Ravindra's the better red ball cricketer and Bracewell's the better white ball cricketer. But actually, Ravindra's really excelling at the white ball game, and Bracewell has done a pretty good job in the test matches. So, you know, both of those players are going to be competing, I think, for the same spot for New Zealand going forward, alongside Mitchell Santner, at least in the white ball format.
Has anyone bought themselves a ticket for the World Cup based on this? Well, we've still got a game to go, haven't we? But this six-game white ball streak?
I don't know that they've bought themselves a ticket to the World Cup, but I think Ravindra, as you say, has put himself definitely in the frame. And I think Milne has probably done the same. Really, really nice effort from him in the T20, in the last T20, picking up 5 for, and kind of bowling. You know, I know the super over didn't go especially well for him.
Why is a guy that bowls 145 bowling two slower balls?
That was very bizarre. We did talk about that at the time, at the ground.
Prior to him bowling both those slower
balls. Paul and I, we both just said, look, you're defending eight, you've got to just bowl, try and hit the stumps twice.
Try and take two wickets.
Exactly, try and hit the stumps twice. But I think the way, you know, that reflects to what he did in that second T20, where he did just, in those late overs, he just ran in and tried to hit the stumps. It was two tail-enders, so that's a different story. But in terms of the squad, I think that's where, as much as people kind of going, oh, well, what a shame it is that the IPL is going on and we're missing all of these players and we're not going to Pakistan. And can I just actually cut back to the Kane thing to say there's been some incredibly terrible takes about that injury and, oh, this is why the IPL sucks. People realise, like, Kane could have got injured just playing for Sri Lanka, playing against Sri Lanka. Like, that is something that could have happened. It's not because he was standing in India.
He could have fallen over on a golf tee.
Or at a wedding, or anywhere.
I think anyone, a bar fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyone who's listening to this podcast and thinking, oh, it's good karma that, or bad karma that Kane went to the IPL and wasn't playing for New Zealand, needs to
have a quiet word with themselves.
Also, that is a once-in-a-lifetime financial opportunity to generate intergenerational wealth for Kane and his children and his children's children. Yeah. No one should begrudge him that.
No.
So let's move on.
Let's move back to this Pakistan series. And I think that's what's going to be really fascinating. I mean, in the last, you know, 12, 18 months or so since we've been going back to Pakistan to play cricket there, it's been, I was going to say, you know, you're going to a similar part of the world to India, so you can kind of see the conditions. But I think the conditions have been drastically different, actually.
They've been really different. The pitches in Pakistan have actually been slow and haven't really turned appreciably, and when they have, they've not done it at the pace of some of these. Well, we go back to, I think, when we were recording the pod in Tauranga, the India Australia test matches going on, they're nothing like those wickets. It is completely different, I think.
And actually, even you talked about those test pitches that we saw, the one day pitches that we saw in India when we went over there for that short series, were completely different to those test pitches as well. They were the flattest things you've ever seen. So, you know, I think it's hard to read in terms of, oh, they're going over there for the conditions. But I do think it's going to be pretty important, you know, back to the Kane thing. I think it's going to be super important for someone like Will Young to go over there. And he's someone, obviously, did very well just in this ODI series. It's crucial innings again. They're only chasing 150, 160. But to actually kind of, they were in a tricky situation, to be the leader to kind of get us through to a win is very important. And he's someone that I think 12, 18 months ago we would have gone, okay, Kane Williamson's down, that sucks. Yeah. But now it's opened an opportunity for Will Young, who we think has a lot of potential and can kind of step in and play a very similar role.
Yeah. Look, I'm not going to ask the question who replaces Kane, because it was clear what your answer will be.
No, well, I think that
no, is, I'm not going to ask you that question. I'm not going to ask you that question.
Well, I think that I do think that that's
Baldy,
what,
stop.
What is so interesting about these squads to Pakistan, though, is that when you look at them, well, one, I want to get your guys' opinion on, like, there's been a lot of disappointment, I think, from New Zealand fans that follow the provincial game, and I think rightly in some circumstances for someone like Tom Bruce, who's been knocking on the door for New Zealand selection for a long time. I think he's actually probably more unlucky not to be in consideration for the what for the Red Bull stuff. Can, mm-hmm. when you actually look at his first class average. He's averages 49 from 120 first class innings. You compare that to only 32 at list A. He does average 27 with a strike rate of 150 in T20. So he's someone that hits the ball powerfully, can play lots of different formats. But, you know, his last 10 innings, 27 not out, 40, 67, 161, 41 not out, 13, 33 not out, 51 not out, 48 and 64 in this recent game for New Zealand A. So that's 500 plus runs at an average of 90. Like, he has been putting it scores together for I think last couple of years he was the leading run scorer last season in the Plunkett Shield. It's surprising to me that he hasn't been given a shot. But the question I was going to ask you guys was more around Josh Clarkson, because Clarkson is someone who everyone is kind of clamoring to get in this T20 side. But when I look at the way that New Zealand has picked their T20 and ODI squads, they've kept them largely the same. They haven't gone, you'd see different formats, really squads are quite different now these days, even the ODIs and T20 squads. But I feel like New Zealand have gone, okay, we're going over to Pakistan for a month. We'd rather just have the same core group of players over there, considering that this is not quite an A tour, but it's, a second tier tour for a lot of these players. Do you think that's the right move? Are they going to learn more from being together, or should they have gone, no, we're playing three T20s, so we should have, our best T20 players, and give someone like Clarkson, who probably, although he did score a match-winning 100 in the Ford Trophy final, probably is being more considered for T20 and not sort of a fringe player for the ODI World Cup. Have they missed a trick by kind of not getting someone like him into the mix?
I don't know. I think if he comes off in Pakistan and has three big games like he did in the Ford Trophy final.
Well, he's not going to, because he's not there. That's kind of what I'm saying. Like, should he be there?
He's not there.
Well, Clarkson is not in that squad.
So maybe he should.
Yeah. My take on it, Lip, is I think you obviously were in Bangladesh, weren't you? And I've kind of stuck with some of the guys that went, I think, Colm McConkey.
Yeah.
So I just don't think you learn a hell of a lot over a three match series, or these bilateral series that we're all over the place in terms of scheduling, right? You learn probably, does the guy fit into the, and I know this is a bit of a cricketing bullshit cliche, but do they fit into the environment? Do they train well? Are they, are they someone that's got that kind of potential? And we've talked about it a hell of a lot around give a guy one game too many. So I think there's an identification piece, which is in the build-up to a big white ball tournament, you probably have got your eye on, 20, 25 guys? And I think what you're looking to do in the build-up to that tournament is give as much opportunity as you can to those 25 guys. And what you're saying now is, do we give a little bit less opportunity to 30 guys or 32 guys? So I think with the depth of New Zealand cricket, notwithstanding that people are going to have stellar seasons on New Zealand wickets, which don't really bear that much reflection to what you're going to be playing on in this, in this World Cup, I personally think going with that, let's get as much cricket as we can into these 25 blokes. And then we've got, we've covered our bases. We know what roles they'll play when they come in. We know that if Kane goes down injured in the IPL, this is the guy that's going to come in and bat three and do that job. And you've almost got that sort of succession planning piece. Whereas when you're bringing in those other guys, it's like, well, where are they going to bat? Everyone can't open in white ball cricket as much as they would probably like to in this modern era. So I think that is the right decision for them to give the opportunities to the people that they've trusted over the course of the last 18 months or so.
Yeah, and they have picked. So I've just had a look at the squad for the first time live on the podcast. They have given opportunities to Bose, to Cleaver, to Lister, to McConkey, friend of the podcast. Give him a shout out, Colm McConkey. Ravindra and Shipley, and Blair Tickner as well. So, like, there are new faces in that squad. There probably just isn't room for Jordan Clarkson if they're going to take that many new faces, even though they're experienced cricketers.
Josh Clarkson. Jordan Clarkson plays for the Utah Jazz. But anyway,
I'm so confused about players with the same first name.
I do think your point there that you raised, Minxie, I tend to agree in that you know, having that's, it seems clear to me that that's what they've gone with. They've gone, well, we want to get the most, you know, the most cricket out of this core group of guys. And I think when you look at that, those squads, there's so much kind of like for like backup development in what they're trying to do. They've picked Blundell and Bowes for the Finn Allen role. They've picked Will Young and Henry Nicholls for the kind of the Kane Williamson role. They've picked Ravindra McConkey for the Michael Bracewell, Mitchell Santner roles. They've picked Milne for Ferguson, Lister for Bolt, you know, Shipley for Jameson, Tall. Like they've actually kind of look, it seems like they've looked at the squad and even like their physical makeup.
They've looked at a depth chart.
Yeah.
It's a depth chart squad.
And gone, well, we want someone who bowls left arm. We want someone who does this. And they've just pieced it together. So, yeah, I do think there's some value in that. As much as some of these guys, I can see that, you know, they are maybe a little bit unlucky. The likes of guys we've mentioned and Rippon and Duffy and even Doug Bracewell, who's kind of been around
Duffy's
the scene.
Duffy's a strange one. I'd have put him in that category of people that probably deserves another opportunity, mm-hmm. given you know, the fact that he's been on a number of tours. He's probably not had an extended run. So yeah, that's probably a surprise to me, more than not picking just, you know, your form bolter out of your domestic cricket. And look, that's a little bit harsh on someone like Tom Bruce, who's done it over a period of time, but I think they've probably made that call. And again, I don't always want to bring it back to England, but it's the same story as some of these guys that, you know, have been talked about for a long, long time, who are not going to get a go. They're going to end up being very good first class cricketers, because England have said, this is our depth chart, this is the way we're going to play our cricket, these are our alternates for those roles. Keep scoring 10,000 runs a season, but you're not going to get a look in just based on sheer rate of runs in domestic cricket.
Domestic cricket's probably a good segue to Central Districts.
And deliberate, yeah.
The way that they've kind of finished the season, winning the Ford Trophy, excellent effort there from, as we mentioned, Clarkson and Bruce, to kind of big partnership to get them across the line against Canterbury, and then again have just pipped Canterbury, well, actually tied on the Plunkett Shield score points table to win the Plunkett Shield by defeating Auckland. But there was a bit of chat and a bit of controversy on our Slack channel in the way that game kind of unfolded. A lot of rain in the last day, and this is it, or last match, and this is the game that's being replayed. Had to be postponed because of all the floods. I can't actually remember which floods. We've had such a rough time of it here in New Zealand this summer, but yeah, a lot of rain in the game, and then some interesting declarations. And I guess in a game where the stakes are so high, do we think that there was obviously some chat involved, that's how a lot of games unfold, but is that the way to end a season?
I guess it depends when the chat took place, right? So I think if you look at it from a CD perspective, they're well within their rights to pull out nine down in the first dig. You know, you'll often see that. What's the point in, you know, sending someone out? You might as well warm the roller up instead.
Well, and actually they did declare four runs short of another bonus point,
yeah.
So, which made it even more interesting.
Yeah.
Because traditionally you'd just go for that point.
Yeah, so I think, I don't think you can argue at that. And then I think obviously what we're really talking about is that Auckland declaration at 160 for one. That sounds like a negotiation of some description. But, you know, it is something that happens in domestic cricket. If this was round three, we probably wouldn't be talking about it.
No.
It's because it's, you know, the final game. And ultimately, as, I guess pipped, you know, Canterbury for the trophy as to, you know, why it's a little bit controversial. I don't know if you've got any inside knowledge on, you know, the workings of those, you know, those dressing room conversations, but that's the one that's really the weird one, isn't it, in terms of that Auckland declaration?
Yeah, and I think the unfortunate part of that, I guess, from the outside is that, you know, Auckland's got nothing to play for in that game, so they, like, why not have a target to chase? Like, I don't actually think that anyone's really at fault. It's just sort of, I don't know, when you look through the scorecard, it's kind of weird. And I think realistically, they still skittled Auckland in that second innings. Like, it was never close. Ray Tall just took them apart, took 7 for 57, and, like, you know, full credit to CD. They deserve, you know, when you come and destroy a side like that in the fourth innings, I think you deserve to pick up your title.
Yeah, absolutely. You bowl a team out in 28 overs for 100, then yeah, good on you. You've deserved those 10 wickets, but you would have thought that the game would have been a draw, but for that pretty sporting declaration from Auckland.
Mm. Possibly.
But I mean, if we look at the last 12 months of, you know, international red ball cricket, why not try and go for a result? Mate, you know, like, what's a draw worth? A draw's not any help to anybody. So
yeah,
you may as well go for a win. And if you get bowled out for 100 going for a win, well, fair enough. You know, the opposition's pretty good.
It's bloody interesting watching the county championship warm up games. Rory Burns, not really known for getting after the bowling, was caught at mid off charging in the first ball of a 4-day warm up game.
First ball of the game.
Mate, he's given it the
brilliant.
He's given it the bugle and he's tried to slap it over mid off and got caught waist high at mid off.
How good.
So we're going to see a lot of that, I think, in this Bazball era. Talking of sporting declarations, do we want to talk a little bit about, or declarations in general, do we want to talk a little bit about this unofficial test match in Lincoln, Australia A,
New Zealand? The double A game.
Yeah.
I think we've, again, kind of just got to give credit to New Zealand for chasing that down. I mean, when you chase down 360-odd or whatever it was, it's a huge effort. Again, you see the sporting declarations. Didn't look like our bowling had much cut through against Australia's batting. Renshaw, big runs there and kind of piling on the runs. And yeah, they declared both innings in very comfortable positions.
I think New Zealand only took 8 wickets in that game.
I think you're right. And, but, you know, I think, again, it's kind of, it's great that some of these guys, Bruce and Cam Fletcher, it was great to see him, you know, leading the side home there, and it kind of got quite close at the end.
Yep.
And Cam Fletcher went bang, 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 had a couple of big sixes at the end to finish the game. So, yeah, nice to. He's had a really disrupted season with injury, started with the New Zealand A tour that he was on in India, broke his finger, I think. So, yeah, really nice to see him scoring runs again, and yeah, just a pretty impressive performance. I think Foxcroft again, his performance in this game is going to get people pretty excited about what he can maybe do for New Zealand whenever this residency situation kind of gets sorted. There's a lot of smoke out there about how New Zealand could apply for a
so we can play A cricket without yeah okay so it's different rules for A cricket okay.
Yeah, as far as I know, the A cricket doesn't have any thing, because Rippon as well has played a bit of A cricket before he was actually eligible for us. I think Wagner did the same, so yeah, well, sounds like that's no real problem. But yeah, exciting. I think that, you know, he takes a step up again and immediately, you know, scores a pretty important 90-odd and kind of got out in a really unfortunate sort of way, reverse sweeping, kind of edging one. So, yeah.
And Bordy, from an Australian perspective, Matt Renshaw in the runs both innings, maybe not interestingly, but opening the batting, is that where he sniffs a chance?
It's his best position, that he's an opening batter.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a particularly good middle order. Well, sorry, that's not true. He's a good middle order batter, but his best position is opening the batting. And I think that's where he's eventually going to find himself a home in Australian in the Australian side if he makes it, because Khawaja has got a year or two left. Warner's maybe got a year left. So Australia are going to be in the market for two new opening batters in a short period of time. But what I'm really interested in are players like Teague Wiley, about Tim Ward, who's the Tasmanian, who's a New South Welshman, moved down to Tasmania, who's done very, very well. So I was really impressed to see both of those guys get a bit of a go. And I think in the second innings, Tim Ward made some runs. Interesting to see Aaron Hardy, who's an all-rounder, has been talked about as being a potential Cam Green replacement. When Cam Green was injured, batted but didn't bowl in this game. But there's also, you know, guys like Spencer Johnson. It was great to see him get a game. There's lots being talked about Spencer Johnson. Interestingly, there's a number of these cricketers that are in this game have had their contracts cut too in the latest round of Australian cricket contracts. So
yeah, that's a bit of a merry-go-round, isn't
it? Yeah. So backup fast bowlers are the order of the day if you want to get an Australian cricket contract, but don't be a spinner. So Swepson and Kuhneman, both the Queensland spinners, missed out on contracts, and there's been a bit of a merry-go-round and dancing around of Australian contracts for men and women over the last 48 hours or so. So there's a whole bunch of people that are now not making money, and a whole bunch of people are making a lot more money.
Yeah, and those guys will have another opportunity, I think, on the 8th. I think they play another 4-day, and then all these guys finish this 4-day stuff, finish the T20, which is at the weekend, against Sri Lanka, and then I think that the first T20 against Pakistan is on like the 14th of April. So it's
very quick turnaround
to jump on a plane and then just suit up again to play in that stuff.
And also, quickly before we move off Australia, quick shout out to Campbell Kellaway as well, 20-year-old, has got to go for Australia A. He looks like he can really play cricket as well. So there's lots of players in that Australia A side that I'm looking forward to seeing in the national side in the future.
Yeah, well, we've reached almost the end of the pod, I think. The contracts thing is going to be something I think that's going to come across, you know, our desks or our podcast desks certainly over the course of next year. England have announced, or the ECB have announced, an overhaul of their central contract system, really just looking at the fact that a number of players choosing to play Pakistan Super League, clearly IPL, ahead of maybe England engagements, really just because the match fees aren't sufficient. Someone like Sam Billings, for example, could have gone and had a £5,000 match fee versus going and playing in the PSL for about 20 times that amount of money. It's a no-brainer for those guys, as you said, to create that wealth. And the stat I saw today was fantastic, that, you know, Harry Brook, in the way that the current contracts work, has only got what's called an incremental contract with the ECB, worth about £50,000 or something like that. So his salary still ostensibly played by his county, Yorkshire, who aren't going to see a hell of a lot of Harry Brook, I wouldn't have thought, over the next 3 or 4 years. And you know, he's getting something like £1.3 million to play in the IPL. So his England contract chicken feed compared with, you know, his rate on a for doing the same job. So we go to the Dustin Johnson and Liv comment, you know, why would you not do the thing you love for more money, for less work?
Exactly. Awesome. And on that bombshell.
Let's finish. So we're doing less work.
Exactly, yeah. For the same amount
for the same amount of $0.
Exactly. But look, that is the end of the Top Order podcast for another week. We will be back next week and every week thereafter to talk a little bit of IPL, at least for the next whatever it is, 18 weeks that tournament goes on. Next week, of course, the, you know, Gujarat Titans will be fish and chip paper, and the Mumbai Indians will be at the top of the league, no doubt. But for now, it is good night and God bless from us all here in Auckland. We'll see you next week. Please do, as all social media influencers as we are, say like and subscribe to the podcast if you're watching it on video, or leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice. But as we said, till next week, we'll see you soon. Good night.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.